From the center of the hockey universe, this is the Off the Post podcast.
Welcome to another episode of Off the Post. I'm your host, John Mattis of Post Media, and on the line today I have Ken Weeb of the Winnipeg Sun. He covers the Winnipeg Jets for Post Media. Ken, what's new?
Oh, not much, John. Just enjoying the five-day break. Well, it's the Jets break. Not a break for me, but 5 days without Jets hockey. Time to reassess where they are as some teams get caught up in the old games played department.
Yeah, no kidding. And it's kind of a perfect time to check in with you because there's no games going on and you can look back, you can look forward. It's I guess, one of the only positives of this bye week. Every team seems to be losing off of the bye week, so we'll see what happens with the Jets.
Yeah, no doubt. The big thing for them, as Paul Maurice kind of pointed out in Toronto the other night, they're the only team in the league that's played 34 road games. So while their chances are certainly slim in a lot of regards in terms of catching the teams in front of them, they have had one of the toughest schedules, and the toughest portion of the schedule is already over for them. So. And I think the other thing that's interesting is that LA and Calgary play several times head-to-head, so there are available points, and the head-to-head matchups will ultimately determine where they are at. Obviously, it's an uphill climb for them, even though they're still on the periphery of this race here, but Jets will need somewhere in the neighborhood of 14 wins out of 19 games. So for a team who's only won three in a row once, it is certainly highly unlikely, but the Jets have been playing better lately and a little bit more to their identity, which is something that they really struggled with this year.
Like you said, they're running out of time real quick here. That's an insane amount of games you got to win down the stretch. And I hope for the sake of, you know, Winnipeg fans and for the sake of a franchise that I hope does well, that at the deadline, Kevel Cheveldayoff stays put, as he usually does. He doesn't trade much, but I hope he doesn't get too caught up in their recent success and goes ahead and tries to make it and then, you know, sacrifices some assets. I don't think he'll do it, but that would kind of be just the wrong route to take at this point in their season. Would you agree?
Yeah, I don't see the Jets going all in, for lack of a better term here. I think they definitely could use some depth on defense. I could see a move similar to what Calgary did in bringing in Michael Stone. If you can bring in a guy to help bolster the third pairing, I could see something like that. But because of the expansion draft, I just don't see the Jets being super active. And, you know, in terms of their unrestricted free agents, it's not exactly a long list of hot commodities. You know, Drew Stafford has had an injury-plagued year and has not been nearly as productive as last when he had 21 goals. He's a guy I could see being moved out regardless, you know, even though the Jets are still in contention. You know, he'd be a guy that could be some insurance for one of the, you know, top teams or a contender. But the Jets would have to eat at least half of the salaries, like $4.35 million. So, and other than that, Andre Pavlik had a little stretch where he looked sharp, but, you know, and all eight starts, he gave up three or more. So would a team view Andre Pavlik as a you know, more viable number two? Possibly, but I don't see there being a high demand for him either. Paul Postma is a pending UFA. He's, you know, career high in games played and assists, but, you know, maybe a team that's looking for a third pairing guy or a number seven could look his way. But other than that, I think Chris Thorburn is the only other UFA, so I don't see the Jets being super active unless they can find a defenseman that kind of fits the bill. And complicating matters is the whole Tyler Myers injury situation. So only 11 games played this year, which has been a serious blow to the Jets. If Myers is in the lineup and he's somehow on your third pairing, the third pairing woes are probably solved. But, you know, because he just had the recent surgery, I think it's groin. It was never, you know, said, no, at least not to us. There was an outside chance Paul Maurice said he could be back before the end of the season, but, you know, when a guy hasn't played since November 11th, it would be hard to count on him during those stretch drive months.
Yeah, so according to what you just said in that mini monologue there, the Jets don't even really have many trade chips. I can't talk.
Well, the one guy I think it's been interesting to monitor, Matthew Perreault, has had quite a resurgence here in the last little stretch, but complicating matters with him is he's just about to go into hit the new portion of the contract extension that he signed in the summer. It's a four-year deal worth $16.5 million. So he'd be a perfect fit for the Montreal Canadiens if he was a pending UFA on an expiring contract in terms of, you know, adding some secondary scoring. But for them, they're not – I don't think they can fit that in under the cap. So, and the only reason the Jets would move Perreault potentially is because of expansion, but – in making some calls this week around the league and in working on one of my expansion draft to look into the crystal ball, a smart person mentioned to me that you got to be careful with that line of thinking also, because if you're trading a guy now, you're still going to lose a player at the deadline. So you kind of, you almost can't outthink yourself, John, where you think, oh, I better get an asset for this guy, but next thing you know, you've lost that player, and now you're going to lose another player still to Las Vegas. So it was something that I found quite interesting, and I wish I had thought of it myself.
Well, I think that's a sentiment that's being shared across the league, where when Vegas was announced and when the expansion draft rules were released, everyone's going, okay, let's count, you know, all our chickens and see what we can do here, how we can maneuver and how we have to prepare before the trade deadline. But then it sounds like most teams are going, let's think about the here and now, let's get through the season. Yeah. And then, you know, we'll address the expansion draft when it arrives. Cause otherwise you're just kind of, you're over, like you said, overthinking it and kind of playing yourself into a corner where you're losing guys for no reason.
Yeah, exactly. And we see it today with Pittsburgh saying they don't have any plans to move Marc-Andre Fleury. A couple teams looking for goaltenders were kind of hoping that the Penguins might, you know, panic, for lack of a better term, and move him right now. But I think, again, from talking to hockey personnel guys around the league, they think that the busy time is really going to be in that June period between the end of the Stanley Cup final and when you have to submit your list. I think that's when we're going to see come some of these last-ditch moves. And even then, I just don't think there's going to be as much movement as people think. And even leading into this last week here, I just don't see a ton of movement, and I think the trade deadline shows there are going to be some moves for sure, but there's too many teams that are on the periphery in both East and the West that think they're still in it. You know, maybe they shouldn't, but there's too many teams that think they're still in it, and I don't see any of those panic style moves. And even the rental market is going to be interesting. And the other part is that if you're going to lose this player in 2 months or in you know, in June again, you know, what are you going to give in order to get him? And all we've heard in terms of the rumor mill is astronomical prices for Matt Duchene and companies. So I don't know. I think we'll just see more minor deals, you know, like the one we saw today. Pittsburgh has a need on defense. They go out and get Ron Hainsey, a veteran who has not been to the playoffs in 890-plus games. And, you know, I covered Ron here in Winnipeg, and good for him to get a chance to go to a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. He's waited a long time, and I think he's going to be a guy that can really help the Penguins' third pairing, just with being a smart puck mover and still having some mobility.
Now, if we get back to the Jets, and I guess forget about the trade deadline because it doesn't look like they're doing much, let's just assess their season as a whole. I mean, if I'm thinking off the top of my head, they're around two-thirds of the season, maybe even further than that. And their record is 28, 29, and 6. They have 52 points. Their goal differential is pretty ugly at minus 15. And they're fifth in the Central. They're in the playoff hunt, but they have so many games in hand over other teams that, like we've discussed, the chances are very slim that they're going to make it. How would you assess their season so far? Underachieving, overachieving, as expected? I think I know the answer, but I'll throw it to you.
Yeah. You know, John, to me, the Jets were a bubble team going into the year, so they're still a bubble team. Maybe they're a little bit further behind than what they had hoped for, but it's easy to pinpoint the reasons for that. Their goaltending has continued to be subpar, and that is partly related to the fact that their commitment to the defensive zone has been lackluster. They take too many penalties, and their penalty kill is not very good. So when you're looking at that combination, it's a challenge. And, you know, again, a lot of teams in the NHL have had injury concerns, but the Jets have been hit quite hard. They lost Brian Little in the first period of the first game, four shifts in. Their back end has been decimated, might be a stretch, but they've been under attack. And Jacob Trouba being out of the lineup for the first 15 games of the year with the contract stalemate was a massive blow for this team, especially considering how well Trouba has played since he's returned. He's essentially become their number one defenseman. There's still nights when Bufflin has more minutes and has more power play time, but Trouba's just been fantastic this year. So in a long-winded way, I think the Jets are similar to where they expected. I think that they overestimated their backup goaltending to a certain degree. Michael Hutchinson continues to be an incredibly hard worker, but he just is not performing at the level he did in the first year and a half as an NHLer. So for Connor Hellebuck, he's a first-year starter, essentially. He had 26 games last year, but he needed a little – with a veteran backup, John, I think the Jets could be above the playoff line. And again, I'm not just putting it all on the goaltending because there are some other concerns, but I think the Jets are very similar – to where they were expected to be. Like I said, bubble team, if all things go well, or a lot of things go well. Some of those things didn't go well, and as a result, they're on the outside looking in, at least for now.
All right, many things to unpack there. Let's start with the goaltending.
Sure.
So when I look at their crease, it's a mess. I mean, Connor Hellebuyck, yes, he could turn into a starting goaltender, a league average or above goaltender, which is what you want. I mean, you don't need Carey Price. You don't need Henrik Lundqvist. If you have a quality goaltender that can win you, you know, two out of three games, then that's great. But and like the jury's out on him, but at the same time, you expected him to kind of grab that job and really run with it. So I guess, you know, he has a second chance on the horizon, and down the stretch, he obviously is going to be given his starts. But after that, I mean, what's the short and long-term answer? Like, Hutchinson hasn't really impressed. His career save percentage is .908. That's not good enough. Pavlik is – I think the organization finally came around on him and went, this is not an NHL goalie, at best a backup, and they've kind of treated him that way this year. It took him a while to come around, but it's happened. So at least they've moved on from that. He's still within the organization, obviously. But long term, I guess it's Hellebuyck or bust, or not necessarily bust, but or reassessment.
Yeah, I would. You know, they have Eric Comrie with the Manitoba Moose. He's had a pretty solid year on a team that struggled again near the bottom of the AHL standings. I don't think he's ready for next season. If I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, I'm looking to upgrade my backup situation. And again, it's up to him whether he thinks he needs a bona fide number one, or if he needs a 1B, or do you want it to be an open competition for that starting job? I think Hellebuyck is the long-range plan, pardon me, as the starter. And I think he deserves that. You know, this is an apples and oranges comparison, but I went back and looked at Carey Price's numbers from his first year as a starter. They weren't great, and his pedigree is a lot higher than Connor Hellebuck's. So Hellebuyck is a late bloomer. He deserves to still be in the consideration for the number one job, and I think long range he gets it. But if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, I bring in the best backup or backup plus that I can find. I'm not sure if they're going to go out and spend what it takes to bring in the next Cam Talbot or Martin Jones, but whether it's Michael Neuwehr or you know, somebody of that ilk, or if it's Brian Elliott, you got to have somebody who can push for somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 30 starts and can give you above average goaltending. We've talked about it a lot. The only year the Jets had above average goaltending, Andrei Pavlik had a .920 save percentage and a .220 plus goals against. They made the playoffs that year, but that year itself, Andrei Pavlik lost the starting job for a long stretch to Michael Hutchinson. So it's been an issue in the crease. And again, I've said this a lot, it's not all goaltending, but the goaltending has to be at a league average level or above in order for this team to be successful right now. So there's no easy answer on who's number one going into the year. I don't see the Jets going a Ben Bishop route where you're going to have to pay somebody, lock him in for 5 years. unless Hellebuyck falls flat in his face during the last 19 games. And based on how he's played after his reset, I don't see that happening. But I do see a definite need for a number one B here.
I like that angle, the number one B, and sort of stabilizing it while Hellebuyck gets used to the NHL, while grows. That makes a lot of sense. That if I'm a Jets fan hearing that as opposed to my doom and gloom, that sounds a lot better. Let's talk about Trouba. You mentioned him before and sort of talked about his situation quickly. Looking at his numbers, he's definitely improved this year in terms of, you know, how many points per game he's going to end up with. He's the whole thing with him, at least from my memory, if I'm not mistaken, was that he wanted more ice time. He's only getting like two more minutes a game. I don't know if that's, is he happy? Is Trouba a happy camper now?
Well, I think, you know, just you'll never really get the full truth without the truth serum, John. But to me, in my conversations with Jacob Trouba, he seems happy with his expanded role. It was, you know, again, we're taking his word at face value. He wanted to play on the right side, which is his natural side, and he wanted to have a larger piece of the pie. So, year before, he was already third in ice time. This year, he's second in ice time. To me, for a guy who is not on the first power play, to be able to add 2.5 minutes average to your time on ice, I think that is a substantial difference. And he is being used on the second power play unit and showing signs. So, I don't know that Jacob Trouba is going to get... He's almost at 25 minutes a game. You know, again, there's a lot of teams in the NHL that need high-end defensemen, but is he going to find a situation where it's better for him? I mean, Dustin Byfuglien's had an up-and-down year here. I think he's really the pressure of the big-ticket contract, although he probably would never admit it. I think it's been a factor. The risk-reward element of Dustin's game has gone sort of the pendulum has swung back the other way after kind of getting it under control last year. I think he's tried to do too much. Most of his mistakes come from wanting to do too much, like the other night in the game-winning goal against the Leafs. So that's allowed Trouba to take a bigger chunk. And Jacob's always said to me that he wants to be an elite number one defenseman. And I think you can make the argument that he's the Jets' number one defenseman now. Could he go elsewhere and do that? Of course. But if I'm Jacob Trouba, I'm looking around. If the organization brings in a couple more pieces, this is a team that could contend for a long time, and he'd have a very big responsibility in that. So unless there's a deeper-rooted issue that we are unaware of, I think the Jets could eventually convince him to sign long-term, but that means handing out a long-term deal somewhere in the $7 million range. He hasn't earned it yet, but he's gone back to showing that I think he can be a legitimate number one defenseman in the NHL.
Well, Paul Maurice is definitely trusting him. He's got 3 minutes on the penalty kill a night, and they don't just give away those minutes, those valuable defensive minutes, to guys that are just kind of on the fringe or just not good enough. It's clearly Maurice has a soft spot for him at this point. Okay, let's shift forward and talk about the forwards and the incredible duo that's up front and really sort of taking the league by storm this year, Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine. Laine, just whenever I watch him, I think of Ilya Kovalchuk and just that release and the timing and the way that he kind of carries himself on the ice. And he's got a ridiculous shooting percentage right now, 19.9, so 20%. He's scoring on one every five shots. That just doesn't happen. That's going to come down. I don't know how far. I mean, he's obviously a great shooter, so maybe it comes down to 15 for his career or over the next couple of years. I guess we'll see what happens. But 30 goals in 55 games to start your career is pretty phenomenal, and obviously he's getting the Calder Trophy praise that he deserves, and we'll see, I guess, what happens with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and Zach Werenski. Such a good rookie crop, but, you know, him and Scheifele, obviously Scheifele's become a cornerstone of the team and one of the best players in the league, really. Having those guys two guys up front that seem like absolute locks to be stars, absolute superstars in the league long term, I mean, those are great building blocks.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Nikolaj Ehlers, I think you could throw into that pile too, in terms of the young, dynamic players they have. He's gone through a little bit of a dry spell in terms of goal scoring, but already 20 goals, a second-year pro. So he's taken strides. The one thing, too, I know for sure, Laine does have a lot of those qualities, but to me, he's going to be a little bit more like Ovechkin, but maybe a better passer. He's got better vision. Sure, the shooting percentage numbers could go down, but this is a guy that's always going to get great looks, and because of just the quick release and the power of his shot, I think he's going to be a consistent 30 to 50 goal guy, and those guys are so hard to find. The biggest thing that the Jets have been lacking in the first 5 years since the relocation is a pure sniper, and it's something we saw in the game against Dallas, the last home game before this road trip. In a tie game, Shifley wins a draw to the right of the Stars netminder, Antti Niemi. The puck is laying there for 1 second. He puts it on in tight on his body, wrist shot, high glove. I mean, they just don't have a dynamic sniper like that. And Laine has come exactly as advertised. And he's only going to get stronger. And the reason I mention Ovechkin is just because he's got a little bit of the physical element to his game. It hasn't been there as often since the concussion, but he has that element. When you throw 10 to 15 more pounds of muscle onto that frame, I think he could just be continued to be a dangerous sniper. And in terms of Scheifele, I don't think he's under the radar anymore, but he's still under the radar in some markets, John. It's not every day that Mike Babcock is throwing praise like that, like you saw the other morning around. This guy is an incredible student of the game, a hard worker. He just eats up every element of hockey. He can't watch it enough, which in today's game, there are not a lot of old-school players that watch other teams. Mark Scheifele can give you the scouting report of all 30 teams in the NHL, and he can't get enough, and he continues to push himself to get better. And for a guy that at one point Jets fans were kind of wondering, who's this guy? And I'll be honest with you, John. I had the Jets select Sean Couturier at 7 overall written in my timeline for Twitter, and all I was going to do was push send. And when they said Mark Scheifele, I was among the many that said, who? I didn't come across him in many of my draft preview work, but he's been just awesome. So,
I distinctly remember him coming on strong at the end of the year and sort of starting to make his way into the draft list and the draft rankings, but never sort of a top 10 consideration. And then he goes like kind of suddenly to the Jets. So, you know, you got to tip your hat to them in terms of who they really got a really good, you know, quality piece out of, well, that was 7th overall, I believe.
Yeah, and obviously there's a relationship with Dale Hawerchuk and some of the guys there that really helped in that. And I know Mark had an outstanding U18 tournament that year, and he was more of a project pick, though. Like, this was a guy that 2 years previous was playing Tier 2 junior hockey, so there was a risk element involved. But, and I love Sean Couturier's game. I think the Jets would have been fine to get him on their team as well, and he would be a very useful player. But they were looking for a bona fide number one center to complement with Brian Little, who is an underrated piece. You know, on the flip side, we talked about the youth, but Brian Little and Blake Wheel are great veterans with this group, hardworking guys. Kind of, they're more than just meat and potatoes guys, but they're guys you can really count on. And they're having, you know, Little especially, 17 goals since his return. He's been outstanding. And Wheeler's having another strong season here again as a captain. Done a great job in the leadership front and just plays hard every night. And although his production has tailed a bit from last year when he was tied for 6th with Johnny Gaudreau in the NHL in scoring, he's having another productive year. He's tracking for, 25 goals again. And he'll be probably above 60 points. So, you know, those guys have been great. A lot of their top prospects are forwards. You got Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic down in the minors at the Manitoba Moose. Connor started the year with the Jets, and those two guys will be knocking on the door in the fall. And they've had a very useful third line with Joel Armia, Adam Lowry, and former Leaf Sean Mathias. And forward, they're pretty set there. And I'm very curious if in the summertime after the expansion draft is over, if the Jets might move one of those young pieces or try to bring a top four left shot D-man into the fold. It would be a bold move, but it's the kind of move I think the Jets will require in order to take that next step.
Yeah, let me just have one last word about Scheifele. I had to look it up because I could have sworn I saw some sort of stat like this on Twitter the other day. So since the calendar turned to 2016, he's only behind Sidney Crosby in even strength points. Crosby has 92. It goes all the way down to 82 for Scheifele. But then after that, it's Patrick Kane at 77, Connor McDavid 75. So he's like, in terms of even just production, not necessarily like the eye test or you know, underlying numbers, like actual just even strength points, very easy, you know, numbers to look at. He's right up there in the upper echelon, and he's really come in into focus, I guess, nationally and you know, whatever, around the continent as of the last year and a half or so. And obviously the World Cup, he was great there. So we can talk about Scheifele all day, and like you mentioned, Blake Wheeler is right up there as a very much a core member of the forward group. Matthew Perreault, you mentioned he's maybe a guy that gets moved, but he's also
he's going to stay. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's a really good complementary top six guy, in my opinion.
Yeah, perfect kind of either second. If he's on your second line, he can be very effective. He's very effective with skilled players. And if Matthew Perreault's on your third line, it just means that you have an additional amount of depth out there, and then he'll help you on the power plays. So, yeah, it's fascinating. The one last thing about Scheifele, too, this guy's an incredible worker. He cannot get enough of the Gary Roberts summer training. He hired Adam Oates as a skills coach, I think it was before last season. And, you know, while most people were, you know, enjoying the Christmas break in a warm climate, Mark spent some time at Starbucks looking at video clips with Adam Oates. Like, this
That's
is a
awesome.
Guy that cannot get enough hockey and is really driven to succeed. I think it was his second year, if I'm not mistaken, in one of the scrums, he mentioned how he wanted to become one of the best centers in the league. And it wasn't said in a cocky sense, John, but it kind of was one of those things where you're like, ooh, maybe you need to pump the brakes a little bit, young man. But that's the kind of determination and will this guy has to become one of the great players. And he's taken some incredible strides. Obviously, his two-way game is not quite at the same level as Brian Little, which, again, that has a lot to do with his experience. But this guy is already a star, and he's going to be a superstar. Even from talking to coaches around the league, he's the guy that, although everyone wants to talk about Patrick Laine, a lot of coaches are saying, hey, don't forget about Scheifele. Whether it was from the World Cup or the World Championship, he's definitely a player on the rise for the Jets.
Before this turns into the Mark Scheifele podcast, let's move on. So the Jets' offense has been fine this year. They're ninth in the league in goals per game, 2.89. That's high, even though it doesn't seem like a high number. But the defense, you know, if you look at complete other side, goals against per game, it's 27th, 3.14. And then special teams just hasn't been good enough. You're grabbing a drink right now, aren't you?
It's just the water. I've been talking so much, I got to keep the throat from scratching up here.
I could really hear it. That was hilarious. And then their special teams, 20th power play, 27th PK. Do you pin that on personnel or on Paul Maurice, the special team struggling?
You know what? The Jets have really struggled on the penalty kill since Michael Frolik departed for the Calgary Flames. That's the kind of guy, super versatile, using on all situations guy. They really missed him, and I think that was one of the bigger mistakes of the Kevin Cheveldayoff era. And not the year that he was going into UFA. It was the summer before where they had a deal that was very close, but they weren't sure on the money because, you know, Frolik's a fourth liner with Chicago. Is he a third liner or is he a second liner? That was the trouble they had determining. And they weren't willing to pay him. I think the number was around $4 million at the time. And, you know, again, with the benefit of hindsight, it was a move they should have made. He was a younger player than Drew Stafford. But they just didn't get that done. And that's been a huge blow for them. And they just haven't had enough of those third and fourth line guys who are on the penalty kill. And every successful NHL team needs your bottom six forward group to be able to kill penalties, so that you're giving a rest to their four top end forwards. I think their forward group, the Scheifeles, the Wheelers, Brian Littles, they need to be taking a rest during those penalty killing minutes, and instead they're often finding that they just don't have, not that they don't have enough gas left, but they're expending a lot of energy killing off penalties. So because the Jets haven't been able to roll four lines as often because of injuries partially, and because they haven't had a fourth line that Paul Maurice can trust to play that 10 to 12 minutes, it's really impacted them in that regard. Power play, obviously, it's better than last year. Line A obviously helps, but there are still stretches where they could obviously do more. They have weapons, but they haven't found the rhythm. But again, they're bringing in Jamie Compan this year. He has a pretty big hand in the power play. I understand it's improving, but has more room for improvement. So ultimately, Paul Murray says special teams are on him, so he certainly has to bear part of the responsibility for that. But I think a lot of it, John, to me, a lot of it is execution. It's easy to say, oh, the coach needs to be better, but every coach is better if he has better goaltending and if he has better execution, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was just about to chime in and say, so if we're assessing Paul Maurice, he's in his third year with the team, I guess third and a half because he took over for Claude Noel. Yeah. So they made the playoffs in 2014-15, didn't last year. They're probably not this year. There's a very high chance they do not make the playoffs.
Right.
Given what he has, you know, doesn't have a quality starter, is lacking depth at forward and defense. Do you think, you know, he's a guy that should be worried for his job, or do you think the organization still really likes him and is going to kind of see it through with him?
Yeah, to me, one of the things that kind of has been overblown in the should Paul Maurice be fired debate, which, you know, it is happening to a certain degree among the fan base here, is that the Jets made an organizational decision to get younger after they made the playoffs, knowing that they were swept by the Anaheim Ducks. They thought they were close. They went with youth and inexperience. And I'm not blaming it all on the youth either, but they took time to reset after that year. So to me, although, of course, the Jets would have loved to make the playoffs last year, and for a franchise going into its sixth year and that one that hasn't won a playoff game in franchise history, you want to see progress. But I do see progress here, whether they make the playoffs or not. To me, Paul Maurice is far more likely to be extended in the offseason than he is to be fired, unless they fall flat in their face. And even then, I think they'd have a longer conversation. But at the end of the day, I think coaches get fired for underachieving or not having it.
It's about wins, right? I mean, as much as it doesn't make sense, it's about wins.
I understand why people want a bit more, but I just don't think that if you look at – I tell people this way. If click on Toby Enstrom's Hockey DB and see how many coaches he's had in his 10 seasons. The Thrashers changed coaches a lot, and the Jets have changed coaches once already. And the one constant is they've been losing a lot. So to a certain degree, the coach has to wear some of that responsibility. But at the end of the day, I think in this case, continuity is a far better path for the Jets to take. I'm not saying keep him in for the sake of keeping him and continuity, but I think Paul Maurice is a smart guy. I know his career record is around a 500 coach, and that's what he's been in Winnipeg. But I think with the right pieces and better goaltending, I think a lot of people would think Paul Maurice is a very good coach. And I don't think the Jets are ready to give up on him yet, even though there are some intriguing other options available. I think Paul Maurice has worked hard at becoming a better coach and bringing new ideas after having some trouble in Carolina and Toronto. And I think that he has taken this group to a place they had not been since 2007 when he had a proper personnel. And I think he can lead them to the playoffs again. Can he get them to be a Stanley Cup team or a Stanley Cup contender? That I don't know. But to me, he will be given another year for sure of benefit of the doubt. But if the Jets are having the same problems next year at this time, we're probably having a different discussion.
Right. I see a lot of similarities between the Jets situation and the Flames. Not from a coaching perspective, but where they are in their development.
Sure.
Just the really high-end forwards and then good pieces on the back end, and then goaltending is the real weak spot. And just the way that they're pushing forward, but not, you know, at full flight. I look at both teams. Like, I had Eric Francis on the podcast to do a very similar State of the Union, and there's just so many things that you can put in both teams in the same bin in terms of roster construction and the way that their development is going and the bumps along the road and how on paper they don't seem that far away, but there's still nothing ever goes as planned.
Yeah, and we talked about that in Penticton at the Young Stars Classic, a bunch of the media guys and even some Flame staffers. I peg both the Jets and the Flames as bubble teams. And, you know, conceivably right now that's where they are. There are a lot of parallels. There are a lot of similarities. There are a lot of similar issues. And whoever can kind of get them ironed out first is probably going to get that playoff spot. Nashville is the other team to me that is the big wild card in this scenario. I know we're talking more about wild card, but to me, Nashville is the team that it's going to be either one or the other. They're either going to figure it out and go on a run, or they're the team that could fall back and open up an opportunity for somebody to claim one of those spots, in my opinion. But for sure, both fan bases are asking a lot of the same questions, and it'll be very interesting to see who get. I only see one of them getting in this year, if at all. Or no, I do see one of them getting in. It'll be hard for both of them to make it unless Nashville falls flat on their face.
Yeah, Nashville's ahead of the Jets in the Central, so that's basically the Jets' Hail Mary is to see them fall and, you know, the Jets rise, and everything would have to go perfectly. How's the weather in Manitoba? Because I know Patrick Laine was looking forward to the quote-unquote warm and sunny five-day break there.
Yeah, it has been warm and sunny. It was only about -4 today, but we've had some above zero temperatures. Festival de Voyageur has been on, and the ice sculptures were melting. We had plus 8 or 9 on the weekend. So it has been a very mild winter here, John. A lot of the players, first-timers, even Sean Mathias is a great example. He came up to me one day in the room after the interview sessions were over and said, this is it. All I heard about how crazy cold Winnipeg was, this has been mild. And much like the first year since relocation, it's been one of the milder winters on file here. So everybody's happy about that.
Same here in Toronto. Apparently it's today's the 23rd of February. There's never been a hotter February 23rd in Toronto. So I guess global, you know, climate change is occurring right now.
Yeah, and Lonnie he has a great sense of humor, but he probably wasn't kidding. Like, this is a guy that when he's in New York, or when he was in LA for the All-Star weekend, he's playing PlayStation. He's not out seeing the sights, touring around. This guy loves hockey, and he's trying to get better while playing PlayStation. So it's a new breed, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Ken, I really appreciate you coming on. And I guess the last case of business here, how can people find you? I guess through your Twitter?
Yeah, sure. You bet. Weeb Sun Sports on Twitter, or KWeeb at Pulse Media. Oh, now you're going to get me here. It's .com, I think.
It's .com. You are correct.
You bet. Good talking to you, John. Thanks for having me.